This is The Green on Delaware Public Media, and I'm Tom Byrne. We've previously reported on historic preservation in the First State, more specifically, what appears to be a shaky track record on the issue, with buildings such as the old Forwood School in Brandywine 100 falling victim to neglect and becoming beyond repair. But some Newcastle County Council members are trying to improve the situation, creating a new working group to address it. Contributor Larry Nagengast takes a look at that group and what it hopes to accomplish in his latest piece, available right now at DelawarePublic.org. And he sat down with me earlier this week to discuss it.
Let's start with the working group itself. Who's behind it? Who else will be a part of it? And what's driving its formation?
Okay, well, it's a loosely organized group. It's a combination of members of Newcastle County Council, some managers in county government, especially from the land use department, some preservation advocates, and some interested citizens. It was organized by Dee Durham, who was elected to the council last November to represent Western Brandywine 100 and the Greenville area. Working closely with her is John Cartier, the councilman who represents Eastern Brandywine 100. And Cartier, for years, has been the council's strongest preservation advocate. And Durham, who is known primarily as an environmentalist, worked years ago for Preservation Delaware, the nonprofit advocacy group. Durham was driven to start this group because the county was virtually powerless last year to stop the demolition of Walker's Mill, which is a 200-year-old structure on the Brandywine that was originally home for the area's mill workers. And of course, it's in Durham's district and fairly close to her home.
Broadly speaking, what kind of things does this group feel it can have the county do to avert situations from getting out of control and essentially kind of beyond help?
Well, you know, the important thing to realize here is that Newcastle County, with so many unincorporated areas, doesn't typically have a lot of historic structures in close proximity to each other. I mean, Old Newcastle is an exception, of course, and the city of Newcastle, which has zoning responsibility for its own territory, takes historic preservation quite seriously. But, you know, if you're looking at Brandywine 100 or Hokesson or Pike Creek or the areas below the C&D Canal, you know, you've got a one-room school here, an old farmhouse there, a mill by the creek, and a church on top of a hill. And as Dave Carter, a councilman from the Middletown area, points out, you know, if you had 15 historic buildings in Old Newcastle being threatened, there'd be a big ruckus. But if you know, if you get 15 buildings threatened and they're spread out all over the county, it's a lot harder to rally support to preserve them. So now to go back and kind of answer your question a little more directly, you know, the members of the working group are looking for ways to make sure that the owners of these properties take good care of them and don't let them fall apart. And they're looking at both carrots and sticks. Carrots like grants or possibly tax breaks, and sticks like stronger laws and tighter enforcement of existing regulations.
The county already has some tools that it can use in this effort. Why aren't they necessarily working at this juncture?
Let's talk about, first of all, the best tool that they have is something that's called historic overlay. It's a special zoning category that offers protections for historic properties that are placed within these zones. Now, there are something like 900 properties in the county that are either on the National Register of Historic Sites or eligible for that listing. But there are only 40 historic overlay zones. So you can see right there that there are a lot of historic sites in the county that aren't protected by this historic overlay zoning. The county also has a historic review board, but its power outside of these historic zones is limited. It does have the ability to delay the demolition of a property, of a historic property, for 9 months, but it can't stop a property owner, most often a real estate developer, from tearing down an old building and putting up something new and profitable in its place 9 months later. And then the county's got something that's called a resident curatorship program, basically letting people move into historic buildings owned by the county if they promise to take care of them. But there are a couple of hitches here, and this is why some of the reasons why it's not working. The county expects participants to put in at least $150,000 on improvements to these properties if they move in, and there's no way that these the resident curators can get any kind of return on their investment when they inevitably move out. So the county's got some tools, but there are some fairly obvious reasons why they're not working.
And as we've seen, even some properties that are owned by the county can't seem to avoid neglect. Can you tell us a little bit about what the county has tried to do in some of those cases and what is and isn't working in those efforts?
Okay, kind of a mixed bag here. I mean, in some cases, as in on county parkland, the county has actually torn down some old buildings, old barns and the like, historic structures that for whatever reason they chose not to maintain. And then they've offered up some of their buildings for these resident curatorships. But as I said, the conditions written into the program have resulted in limited interest. You know, now in one case with the Jester Farmhouse in Brandywine 100, the county has found an alternative to the resident curatorship. A nonprofit group wants to move in there and create an art center and art gallery. And the county and the organization, they tried to do the resident curatorship program, and it was just too many hitches and hassles there. So now they're wrapping up a lease arrangement, and the deal that's being cut is that the county's going to spend some money to fix up the building's exterior, and the nonprofit's going to put up about $100,000, and maybe a little more than that, and they've raised close to that amount already, to do the improvements, the essential improvements to the interior, the heating, ventilation, air conditioning, the essential interior system. And then if all goes well, this facility, which then be called the Jester Art Space, would open sometime towards the latter part of next year.
And while many of the cases we've talked about so far, and you've talked about in your piece, are in northern Newcastle County, specifically Brandywine 100 area, there is one that's playing out right now south of the canal, southern Newcastle County. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay. Well, this debate concerns the Houston House, which is a farmhouse in the Bayberry development, which is just north of Middletown. And it's another example of what the preservation community calls demolition by neglect. A developer doing next to nothing to keep an old building in decent shape and then applying to the county for a demolition permit, which is almost always granted, and usually with that 9-month delay that I mentioned. And in this case, when the developer, Blenheim Homes, filed official plans with the county, it promised to keep the farmhouse standing. And now that was about 15 years ago. Meanwhile, it did little to protect the building, and it finally got around to putting a fence around it after some vandals had gotten in and done some damage to it. So now Blenheim is saying it's an eyesore, it can't maintain the house any longer, so they want to tear it down. And not only do they want to tear it down, they want to build 5 more houses on the site. Now the residents in the area, most of them anyhow, they feel that they're trapped. It may be too late to repair the building and keep it, but keeping it standing would create a nuisance in the community. Those who wanted the farmhouse saved are doubly upset because they think the developer is taking advantage of his own neglect by building more houses to make more money. Now, if the county had stronger laws and procedures, perhaps this wouldn't happen. I'm going to give you some examples of some other possibilities here. Chester County, Pennsylvania. Builders there are required to incorporate historic structures into their communities as they plan them. And they've often made these older homes centerpieces rather than eyesores in their new communities. Now, if the county held developers to their promises, and if they regularly inspected these properties, episodes like this one might also be prevented. And if the county made it a policy not to authorize construction on the site of demolished properties, developers would have one more reason to maintain the old buildings.
You point out in your piece that no matter whether the property is privately owned, like the one you just mentioned, or publicly owned, like some of the ones that are on county property, oftentimes this really always comes down to money. Can you explain how this dynamic tends to work out in these situations?
Well, you know, I talked to Michael Emmons, who's an architectural historian at the University of Delaware, and on the private property side, you know, he puts this quite succinctly. Private property rights in this country is almost like a religion. Okay, so if a property is privately owned, what happens here is that the developer is going to say to the government in one way or another, or to the community, you know, if you really care about this old schoolhouse, how much are you willing to pay to help me keep it up? And then, of course, if it's a building that's owned by the county or the any government agency, then it's typically, ultimately, a budget issue. So, you know, the government looks at the site and says, okay, let's we got to take our pick here. We got to make some choices. Are we going to fix the old farmhouse, or are we going to pay for another police officer or two, or are we going to raise your taxes? So there's some, the decisions aren't easy. Hard choices are going to be made, and quite often the outcome is the disappearance of a landmark that is an important part of a community's heritage.
So your piece does point out there are a few specific possibilities that this working group may pursue going forward. First, tell us a little bit about what the county can do from the governmental side to bolster preservation efforts.
Okay, well, a couple of thoughts here, and we'll just kind of rattle them off. First, that you know, they could expand these historic overlays to cover all of the sites that are now on the National Register or eligible for inclusion on the National Register. They could automatically impose the historic overlay on any property that has a historic structure on it as soon as a developer files a plan to build a new community there. They could offer tax breaks or grants to the property owners to cover some of the cost of maintaining or preserving historic structures. They could revise the guidelines for the resident curator program to make it more appealing to people who might be interested in living in these structures. And they could also give the Historic Review Board more tools to encourage preservation and to prevent demolition.
Beyond that, outside of the governmental realm, what else could possibly be done to maybe make this a little bit more of a priority?
Well, I guess, you know, public awareness can really be a major positive influence. When residents are more aware of their community's history, the more likely they are to support its preservation. So let's tell residents about the historic tax credit program that the state offers so that it's not used primarily by big developers. Let's collaborate with outside organizations, Preservation Delaware, for example, that can provide advocacy, expertise, and some additional financial resources. You know, but the biggest thing of all just might be to lead by example. I mean, every preservation advocate I spoke to in researching this story said essentially the same thing. If the county isn't going to take care of its own properties, it's going to have a very difficult time telling private citizens what they can and cannot do with theirs.
Having said all that, is there some optimism that the county can get a grip on these issues and save some properties in time to make a difference before more of these properties are too far gone to help?
I'm glad you included the word some in your question. Yes, there's some optimism about the ability to save some properties. How much, how soon, I'm not quite sure. Dee Durham talks about picking the low-hanging fruit first, but it's going to take a couple of meetings of this working group to figure out which apples to choose first. Right now, we've got three members of the county council, Durham, John Cartier, and David Carter, who have strong interests in preservation. As for the rest of the 13-member council, well, preservation hasn't historically been one of their priorities. So it's hard to gauge what level of support the working group will have when it does develop some proposals. I'm not saying that the rest of the council is opposed to preservation. It's just something that they really haven't put much focus on in the last 10 years, even more than that. That said, there's a lot of expertise here in the county, in the state. There's volunteers, and in particular on this working group, volunteers from Preservation Delaware, experts from the university, architects, historians. They've got a lot to offer, and working together, they should come up with some good ideas. And here's another reason for hope. Kevin Canico, the Bayberry resident who's fighting demolition of the Houston House, is a relative newcomer to Delaware, and he's never been involved in a preservation battle before. So, you know, this is his first try at digging in on this. So, you know, our farmhouses are evaporating, he told me. I've got a young family, so saving the local heritage is part of my future. Now, if enough people realize the importance of connecting our past to their own futures, there's a much better chance that something good is going to happen.
Thanks to contributor Larry Nagengast for his time on The Green this week. You can find his piece on the newly created Newcastle County Historic Preservation Working Group online right now at DelawarePublic.org. Next, our latest arts playlist tells us about a new summer music festival coming to the Wilmington area. Stay tuned for that here on The Green on Delaware Public Media.